We're holding on Nun Omar Aleph, the seventh line within Mishpacha. We said in the Mishnah that if they had to, that when one of the days of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, and then they had to draw the water on Erev Shabbos. So we said if the water got spilled or if it became uncovered, where then there's a concern that a snake might have drunk from it, then they would get water from the kir, because they can't get water from the shiloyach on Shabbos, they wouldn't be able to carry it. And you can't use water or wine that were left uncovered on the mizbeach. So the Gemara asked, why not? Va'amai, lever b'msanenes. What we should do is we should strain the water and see, put it through a strainer or colander or whatever. And if there's snake venom in it, then it won't go through because it has a different consistency than the water. If we're going to say, the Mishnah is saying you can't do that, Lema masnisin de loikad of Nechemya. Would we then have to say that our Mishnah does not go like the Nechemya? And again, as usual, we would like that a Stam Mishnah should go according to as many Tanoim as possible. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, misanenes yeshba mishum gilui. If you have liquid in a strainer, then there's still a problem of gilui, of leaving it uncovered. If you leave it uncovered long enough that a snake could crawl out of a hole nearby and drink from it. Amar Rav Nechemya, but Rav Nechemya says, Emasai, when does that apply? Bizman she'atachtonim megula, only when the bottom container is uncovered. So in other words, you have the liquid is in the strainer and it's straining into the bottom container, which is completely open underneath the strainer. So then Reb Nechemya says, I agree that there's a problem. Not so much because of the liquid in the strainer, but because the liquid underneath, because that itself might have been drunk by a snake. But if the bottom one is covered, even if the top one is uncovered, then he says there's no problem of gilui, because the venom of a snake is like a sponge. It floats on the liquid and it stays in one place. It doesn't get mixed with the rest of the liquid. So therefore, in other words, so as you strain it, then you'll easily be able to see whether there's any venom in it or not. So it sounds like, according to Reb Nechemya, it's effective to strain it. So why don't we do that? Now, by the way, I mean, there is a Gemara elsewhere that mentions that if you have a liquid into which there's a constant dripping, then there's no issue with gilui, because then with the dripping over there, the snake figures that there's a human being nearby and therefore it's afraid to come out of its hole. However, there's a Tosfos in Baba Kama that says here we don't apply that to the bottom one, even though on the face of it you have liquid dripping from the strainer into it, because since it's so, Tosfos gives over there, because the dripping is so regular that after a while the snake is going to realize that there's no human being there and it's not going to be afraid of anything. Or the Shittim Kubetza says because it's also able to see the strainer over there and realize that there's no human being over there and that the dripping is coming just from that. So Reb Nechemya agrees that the bottom container would be a problem, but he says the top container, there's no problem, because if there is any venom in it, then it'll get strained out. So then we're back to the question, so why don't we just do that in the case of the water over here? If we have reason to be concerned that a snake might have drunk from it, then according to Reb Nechemya, we should be able to strain it, and if no venom comes out, then we know we're good. In fact, there's an interesting point that Achronim discuss over here. What I mean, since when are you allowed to strain liquids on Shabbos? We're talking about here on Shabbos because you prepared the water on Erev Shabbos and then it got uncovered. So what are we talking about anyway? So among the answers, there's an answer from Rabbi Yosef Shalom El Yashiv, who says that in this case there wouldn't be an issue, because it's not like you know that there's something in it you need to strain out. The whole thing is you're straining it in order to check whether there's venom in it. So that you'd be allowed to do, and if it turns out that there's no venom, then you're good.
You'd be allowed to do it because it's a Dvar Sakana?
No, because then you could just use other water. Dvar Sakana would...
Well, how would you know unless you... How would you know? You don't see the venom.
Well, that's exactly why you're not supposed to drink such water in the first place. But here we're not talking about drinking it. Remember, we're talking about pouring it on the Mizbeach. But on the face of it, now it's of course, you know, we know many Yisurim Dirabbanan are suspended in the Bais HaMikdash, and many Yisurim of Shabbos Dirabbanan, many Shavusim are suspended because of Shabbos. We're going to talk about that soon in connection with the beginning of the next Perek, but not Yisurim D'Oraisa, and strain is one of the 39 Malachas. So, but that's one answer, is because when you're straining, when there is definitely something mixed in there and you're straining it out, sure, that would be a Malacha D'Oraisa of Borer. But here you don't know for sure that there is any, so therefore you could strain it as a test to see whether there is any. And if nothing comes out, then you know you're good.
Yeah, anyway, but if something does come out, then you've done a Malacha D'Oraisa.
Not necessarily, because it was Dabar Sheni Miskaven. So
that's according to Rabbi Shimon.
Fine, okay, so the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon anyway. It's Dabar Sheni Miskaven, it's not Psik Reisha, fine. So according to Rabbi Shimon, at least you should be allowed to do it. In any case, though, Rabbi Nechemya, it seems to allow that from the point of view of the possibility of snake venom being in there, that you're allowed to strain it out. So according to him, why are we saying a blanket statement in the Mishnah that it's possible? The Gemara actually, it's also possible, you know, the Gemara may not be referring only to this case where it's on Shabbos. You know, the Mishnah had said a general rule that wine or water that was left uncovered is possible for the Mizbeach. So the Gemara could just be talking about in general, fine, the water only during Sukkot, the wine during Sukkot and the rest of the year, if you leave it uncovered as possible. But according to Rav Nechemya, if it was a weekday, at least for sure, you should be allowed to strain it. The answer is, afilu teimer Rav Nechemya. Our Mishnah could even go like Rav Nechemya, because eimer d'omer Rav Nechemya lehedyet. You know what Rav Nechemya is saying, is that fine, as far as a hedyet, as far as a regular person drinking it, then straining it is good enough. And if nothing comes through, if nothing is left behind in the strainer, then you know there's no venom in there. Aval gavoya mi amar, but even Rav Nechemya, would he say that such a thing is applicable when you're using it for Hashem? But less later Rav Nechemya. After all, wouldn't Rav Nechemya agree with the concept expressed in the pasuk where the Navi says to the Jewish people, when you're bringing defective animals or whatever, or weak animals or whatever is korbanos, the Navi tells them, "Hakrivehu nala fechasecha, offer it, or try offering it, please, to your governor. Pecha is a governor. Hayutzecha, would he accept you? Or hayisafanecha, or would he lift your face, which is an expression in Tanakh meaning to show favor to somebody? Omer Hashem." Says Hashem. So in other words, you wouldn't even bring such a thing in front of a human king or governor or whatever. Certainly, it would be disrespectful to bring it in front of Hashem. So never mind the question whether you can actually strain out the venom or not. According to Rav Nechemya, it still wouldn't be the kind of thing that you'd offer in front of a human governor, and therefore it's improper to offer it in front of Hashem either. So our Mishnah would agree with Rav Nechemya as well. If we were talking about drinking the water, that would be a different matter. In connection with that, in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, now, this whole concept in general of liquids that are left uncovered, in general, we don't apply that nowadays. And the Rishonim say already, because where we live, where the Rishonim lived in Northern Europe, and where many of the Rishonim lived in Northern Europe, and where we live and in other temperate climates, you don't have snakes around as much, such that you should have to be concerned about it. Nevertheless, it says in Shulchan Aruch, still, to use wine that was left uncovered for Kiddush would still be a problem. Because again, it's not the kind of thing that you would serve to a distinguished guest, like a king or a nobleman or whatever, who visited your house. So therefore, you shouldn't use it for Kiddush either. On the other hand, the Magen Avraham says, and Altadav brings it in Shulchan Aruch, that that's talking about if it was left uncovered for a substantial amount of time. If it was left uncovered for a few minutes, then not. I mean, here we're saying a few minutes is enough because a snake might drink from it. So here we're not talking about when it comes nowadays, we're not concerned if it was left uncovered for a couple of minutes. We're talking about if it was left uncovered like all night or something, then it's not the kind of thing you would serve to a human ruler, and therefore don't be using it for Kiddush either. Okay. Hadran Aloch Lulavarava. Now, we learned at the beginning of this fourth perek that we just finished, we had a list of things that take place during various numbers of days of Sukkot. We started by saying lulav and arava take place throughout the 7 days of Sukkot. Well, we said sometimes all 7 days, sometimes only six. We said because each of them has one day, which is Dorcha Shabbos in the Bais HaMikdash, but the other is not. And we went through the various other things, the Halal Bal Simcha, Sukkah V'Nisach HaMayim. Now we're up to the last one in that Mishnah, which was HaCholol Chamisha V'Shisha. We said the Cholol, which is a flute or not necessarily a flute, actually. We'll talk later. It might be actually, it's definitely some kind of wind instrument, but it might be one that it might be one that has a reed in it, something like a clarinet or an oboe or something like that. A flute is just you blow into it, and the various sounds are made by putting your fingers over the different holes, whereas the other ones, you have a reed that vibrates that makes the sound. Anyway, so a cholol is some kind of musical instrument like that. So we said it's chamisha v'shisha. Sometimes it's only for 5 days during Sukkot, sometimes 6 days. Now, which cholol are we talking about? Zehu cholol shabesa she'eva. This refers to the cholol that's used by Simchas Beis HaShe'eva. So in other words, as opposed to the Gemara is going to talk about on Amud Beis, there's the cholol that they use as part of the musical instruments in the Beis Hamikdash to accompany the Karbonos. That's something else. We're going to discuss whether that's Derech HaShabbos, but here we're talking about the one of Beis HaShe'eva. And it wasn't only the cholol, by the way. They had many different musical instruments by the Beis HaShe'eva. As we're going to learn in subsequent Mishnayos, the reason why we mention the cholol particularly is because it had a very high pitched tone, and therefore people heard it more clearly than the other ones. Anyway, so the cholol of Simchas Beis HaShe'eva, she'en a doicha loyos Shabbos loyos Yom Tov, playing it does not override Shabbos or Yom Tov. So if the first day Sukkot comes, which is the Yom Tov of Sukkot in Eretz Yisrael, comes out on Shabbos, then you don't play it on that day, but you play it during the next 6 days of Sukkot, so you have 6 days. If any other day of Yom Tov comes out on Shabbos, then you have only 5 days. So Tosfos mentions, first of all, now with each of the other ones, we had after it mentioned the numbers, the Mishnah said Ketzad, how do you have sometimes this number of days and sometimes, or not each of the other, we have a Lulavadova. We said, how is it sometimes six and sometimes seven? Depends whether this day of Sukkot fell out on Shabbos or not. Why don't we do the same kind of thing over here? The reason is because we have to clarify what cholol we're talking about, as the Mishnah goes on to clarify that we mean the one of Beis HaShe'eva, where with lulav and arava, we didn't need to do that. So therefore, like, there was no room after that to explain ketzad. So Rashi explains the ketzad for us. The other thing, this talks about is why indeed is it not Doicha Shabbos? The whole concept that you're not allowed to play musical instruments on Shabbos or on Yom Tov is a Drabanan. And things Drabanan, generally speaking, are mutter in the Beis Mikdash. So what's the problem? So here Tosfos gives one reason, which is because the whole reason for this musical accompaniment is because of Simcha Yisera. So it's not a good enough reason to be Doicha Shabbos. For the Avodah is one thing, but here this is not really fundamentally part of the Avodah. On Amud Beis, there's a long Tosfos that discusses various issues involved in this sugya about the musical instruments, and Tosfos gives another reason over there, because since the Mishnah goes on to tell us that by Simchas Beis HaShe'eva there were many musical instruments, therefore there's much more of a chance that one of them is going to break. The reason why you're not allowed to play musical instruments on Shabbos is the Chachamim were concerned that then, if, for example, let's say you're playing a string instrument and a string breaks, or you're playing some other kind of instrument and some other part of it breaks, you may come to fix it on Shabbos, which would be a Malacha Daraisa. So fine, Tosfos says, if it was just a few instruments, then fine, but you have so many that there's a much greater chance that one of them is going to break, and then you're going to end up fixing them. So therefore, the Chachamim saw fit to impose the Gzeira even in that case. So it's very possible, of course, that they had Simchas Beis HaShe'eva on the nights of Yom Tov and on Shabbos without musical accompaniment, like we do nowadays. But we don't know. I mean, as far as the part where everybody would gather and where the women would gather, the next Mishnah is going to tell us that only on Matzoi Yom Tov would they set up the balconies over there for the women, implying that on Yom Tov itself, on the first night of Yom Tov itself, they don't expect that much of a crowd, that there's going to be an issue with that. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, Itmar, Rav Yehuda and Rav Eina. Rav Yehuda and Rav Eina disagree what the wording of the Mishnah is. We're saying Beis HaShe'eva, but is that in fact the right word? Chad Toni She'eva, v'chad Toni Chashuva. One of them learned the Mishnah the way we did, that we're talking Zero Chol Shal Beis HaShe'eva. The other one learns it as Simchas Beis HaChashuva. To us Ashkenazim, those sound very, very different. How do you substitute one for the other? But if you remember that a Sfardi is a deep sound in the throat that sounds an awful lot like a hey, then it's easy enough to see how Hashe'eva could become Hashuva. So they're close enough. Anyway, Oma Mazutra, mandatoni she'eva le'mishtabish, or mandatoni chashuva le'mishtabish. As a matter of fact, neither one is wrong. Both of those is a justification for saying the word that way. Mandatoni she'eva le'mishtabish t'chtiv u'sh'avta mayim v'sosim. Because the Pasuk says you should draw water with happiness. We said yesterday that that's the source in, or 2 days ago, that that's the source in Torah for that there should be joy while you're drawing the water. And we said that for that, that's why they blow tkiya through tkiya as an expression of simcha doing it. So therefore, it's appropriate to call it Beis HaSheva. Tosfos also adds not just that they draw water, but also that people can draw Ruach HaKodesh from there. When people are in general, when a person is happy, the Shekhinah is more able to rest on him, as we find by Elisha, for example. So now by Simchas Beis HaSheva, more people are able to achieve Ruach HaKodesh. And the Yerushalmi brings, and Tosfos brings from that, an example of Yonah, the Navi Yonah. When did he get Ruach HaKodesh? When did he become a Navi? During Simchas Beis HaSheva. In fact, it seems it was a family thing in his family to be careful with Aliyah L'Regel, and the Gemara mentions in Erevin that his wife used to do Aliyah L'Regel, and the Chachamim didn't protest, even though women are not chayiv in it, as we'll learn in Masechta Chagiga in a few months, Bez Hashem, because the mitzvah says Hashem's man grama. Nevertheless, his wife was makbid to do it. So I guess he was also makbid on it, and then therefore he came to get Gilui Shekhinah by it. There's many years, of course, every year that ever used to bring on one of the nights of Simchas Beis HaSheva, and each year we would talk about it, so, you know, different aspects of Simchas Beis HaSheva and what it's all about and so forth. In one of those sichas in the early years that ever talked about the idea in general, Simchas Beis HaSheva is the idea of elevating something to higher than it was originally. There's the water here on earth, which originally, what the Medrash says, that the waters here on earth complained that they were separated from the waters, Lamaila, the waters that are in the Shemayim, and Hashem promised them that, among others, Nisach HaMayim is going to be done with them. So during Sukkot, we're accomplishing that. We're taking that and elevating it to a higher level than it was before, and in connection with, and also specifically, we do it with water, because water represents Kabbalah's oil, and therefore it represents, so therefore Yonah particularly, whose mission was to go and get not only the Jewish people, but even the Goyim to do tshuva, as we see what happened with him. So therefore, particularly he was zeichah to Ruach HaKodesh at this time. Anyway, so that's one meaning of Simcha. So that's why we can call it Simchas Beis HaSheva. Uman the Tony Chashuva leMishnabish, and vice versa, the one who calls it Simchas Beis Chashuva is also not wrong. Because the Amar of Nachman, mitzvah chashuva hi, it's an important mitzvah, Obam Sheshes Mebereshes, it goes all the way back to Sheshes Mebereshes, as we talked about yesterday, that the shisin, that the cavities under the mizbeach, that the wine and the water flowed into, were created during Sheshes Mebereshes. So the infrastructure for this mitzvah was created already then. Marsha explains also, after all, if the shisin were only meant, if there was only a mitzvah to pour wine on the mizbeach, there'd be no reason that the shisin have to go all the way down to the depths. We could have, like we said yesterday, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's shita, or no, not Rabbi Elazar, but Tzaddik rather, who said that it goes into an underground cavity that has floor tiles, and that would collect it from there once every 70 years. The reason it had to go all the way down to the tahoim is because you're pouring water as well, and you want that water to mix with the water of the tahoim. Well, therefore, so particularly from Sheshes Mebereshes, those shisin were made for that purpose, to be able to pour water into them, which will go down to that depth. And then there's also, like we just said, there's the idea about the Mayim HaTachtonim complained in Hashem during Sheshes Mebereshes, and Hashem promised them that they're going to have Nisach HaMayim done with them. So that's also that from Sheshes Mebereshes already, it was preordained that they're going to be doing this mitzvah. Okay, so therefore, that would be a reason to call it Simchas Beis HaShoveh. We learn in a brisa. Hacholo doicha es a Shabbos divrei Rabbi Yosi by Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi by Yehuda says that the cholol is doicha Shabbos. V'chamrim af yomtiv ain't a doicha. The Chum said, never mind Shabbos. It's not even doicha yomtiv. So which cholol are we talking about? Again, we said in our Mishnah we talked about the cholol that's used in connection with Simchas Beis HaSheva, but you also have, again, the cholo that was part of the musical accompaniment to the korbanos. So which one are we talking about? Amar Reb Yosef machloikas b'shir shel korban. So Rabbi Yosef says that the machlokas over here is about the singing that accompanies the korban. During certain public korbanos, they would have the levim would sing, and there would also be an orchestra playing. In particular, Rashi brings from a Mishnah in Erechin that says there were 12 particular times during the year when you had flutes as part of that orchestra. Now about those flutes, then Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you do them even if one of those 12 days is on Shabbos, and the Chum say that not only on Yom Tov. The machlokas would be that Rabbi Yossi sava ikur shira b'kli. Rabbi Yossi holds that the main part of the singing is what's done with the instruments. Therefore it's part of the avoda, but doicha Shabbos. And just like every other part of the avoda is doicha Shabbos, you shecht korbanos, even though that's a malacha. You do lots of other things, even though you burn things on the mizbeach, even though that's a malacha. So the same way, you would play the instruments, even though that's a gzeirah, even though that's an isur, d'rabbanan, because it's part of the avoda. But rabbanan sabri ikur shira b'pevel am avodahi. The Chum say no. The main part of the main mitzvah of the shira is the vocals. So therefore, so playing with the instruments is not an avoda. The ain't a derech Shabbos, and it's not derech Shabbos. That we have to have music during the korbanos. That the Gemara and Erechin learns from various psukim. So Rabbi Yossi says that you must have the shir is not really a shir unless it's accompanied by music. And the Chum disagree. The Chum said the primary thing is that the Levim sing the Shir Shoyim. The Shir Shoyim that we say nowadays, or we talked about briefly in the previous Perek, and we'll talk about again in our Perek about the special Shir Shoyim that they had for each of the days of Sukkot. So that's the main thing according to the Chacham. So according to them, then that's the music is not really an essential part of the avodah. So therefore, we're back to it's an isur d'rabbanan. And again, as Tosfos says, you know, it's one thing if you only had a couple of instruments, then fine. But since even by the korbanos you have a lot of instruments, then the chachamim don't like the idea of doing it on Shabbos because it's highly likely that one of them is going to break, and you're gonna forget that it's Shabbos and fix it. There is actually, Tosfos refers to a Mishnah in Erevin that mentions that that if a harp string breaks on Shabbos, for example, in the Beis Mikdash, then we said over there that one opinion in the Mishnah says there that you're allowed to retie it on Shabbos, and another one says you're not allowed to make an actual regular tie, only a bow tie. So Tosfos says that fine. Rabbi Yosef. Now we're going to have another opinion later on in the Gemara, which we'll discuss tomorrow, Best Hashem. But right now, according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding of the machlokas of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chachamim, then it comes out that only Rabbi Yosef and Yehuda allows the music for the korbanos. So he would say that those mishnayos and erevin are according to him, and the Chachamim would disagree. In Chassidus, by the way, it talks about there's a mimer in Torah Ur for Parshas Vezos HaBracha, and various other places it discusses the deeper idea. Shira b'peh represents the avoda of the neshama, so the Jewish people, and shira b'kli represents the avoda of the malachim. So therefore, the essential machlokas over here is which one is greater, which one is more essential. So anyway, so that's as far as that. Abel Shirshol She'eva, but Rabbi Yosef says the music by that Simchas Beis She'eva, Divrei Hakol Simcha Hi. Everybody would agree it's only there for Simcha. Ve'ena Deuchas Shabbos, and therefore it's not Deuchas Shabbos. So this that we say in the Mishnah that the Cholol, which is the Cholol of Simchas Beis She'eva, we said is for 5 or 6 days. According to Rabbi Yosef, everybody would agree to that. Even Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, who says that it is Deuchas Shabbos, not this one. Because not for the korbanos, it's only for Simcha. Right. Amr Rabbi Yosef, Menoam Mina, the Bahavli. So Rabbi Yosef says, how do I know that is the subject of their machlokas? D'tanya, clay sharis chason shal eitz. Suppose you make clay sharis out of wood. Let's say you don't have the original menorah, so you make one out of wood. You don't have a bowl available to catch the blood of the korbanos, so you make one out of wood, etc. Rebbe posel Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda Machshir. Now, so Rabbi Yosef Yehuda in particular says it's kosher. So Rabbi Yosef says, my love, b'hokam b'pugi. shouldn't we understand that that is the under that the underlying machloekas is man de machshir, the one who says that it's kosher, of Yosef Yehuda, who says that it's kosher made out of wood, sava, he holds ikar shira b'kli, even though it is true that the primary part of the shira is the part with the instruments, and therefore that the instruments are considered a kli sharis, nevertheless, he would say, v'yalfinen ba, me'avuva de Moshe. Nevertheless, he would say, we can learn from the abu that was made in Moshe Rabbeinu's time. The Mishnah, the Gemara in Erechin tells us, now an abu, the Gemara discusses over there that an abu is another name for a cholil, although the Rambam learns a little bit differently. The Rambam learns, like we said before, that a cholil is an instrument that requires a reed as part of it, like a clarinet or other such things like that. And the reed itself is called an abu. So in other words, in such things like a clarinet or whatever, the sound is made by a reed that you blow on the reed, and the reed vibrates, and that makes the music. It's like part of the mouthpiece. Like you have, as opposed to, for example, a flute or a harmonica or whatever. A harmonica actually does have reed just inside, but whatever. In a flute, for example, you have nothing moving at all except the air that you blow into it, and then you use your fingers over the different holes to produce the different tones. But then you have instruments with reed. So the Rambam learns that the abu was a reed that's used in such instruments. Anyway, the Gemara there in Erchin tells us that there was an abu in the Beis Mikdash that still existed from Moshe Rabbeinu's times. Now, it was made out of wood because that gives the best sound. One time, one of the kings, it doesn't say which one, decided to plate that abu with gold. Because it didn't match it, everything else, and so it should be a hidu mitzvah. But then it didn't sound as nice. So they had to remove the gold plating, and then it went back to sounding nice again. So of necessity, therefore, the abu has to be made out of wood or reed or whatever. So Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says, okay, if we take the view that ikar shira b'kli, that the main part of the mitzvah of shira is the musical accompaniment, then we see that there was an instrument there that was made out of wood, this abu. And it had to, and so therefore he says you can learn from that other clay shardis can also be made out of wood. So therefore he would say that other clay shardis as well can, yeah. Umand apostle, whereas Rebbe who says it's apostle, Sava Ikar Shira B'Peh, he would say the main part of the shira is the vocals. The instruments are not a clay shardis at all. And therefore, V'lo Yalfinin, Ma'abu V'Demosha. So he would say there's nothing to learn from the Abu of Moshe, because that's not a Kli Shoris. And so you can't derive from that Kli Shoris should be able to be made out of wood. So if we say that, says Rabbi Yosef, then there you go. You see that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the Kli Shir are the essence of the Avodah, of the Shir. However, the Gemara says, Loi, not necessarily is that the explanation of their machlokes. The Kula Alma Ikar Shira B'Kli, they might both agree that the main part of the Avodah is with the instruments, and therefore that the instruments are considered a clay shardis. V'hocha b'donin efsha mishi efsha kamiflagi. The machlokes would be, can we learn something which is possible to do some other way from something which is impossible? The abu who was saying necessarily had to be made out of wood. It wouldn't sound as good if it was made out of some other material. As opposed to other clay shardis, you don't have that constraint. You could make them out of metal. They're not going to be any worse if you make them out of metal than out of wood. Do we say, well, since we have a case where it's impossible to make them out of anything but wood, do we say we can learn from that to other things that we should be allowed to make them out of wood or not? Mandamachir, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, who says it's kosher, Sava, Don, and Efshem, and Shefshem. He says it's true that the abu was made out of wood because there was no alternative. Nevertheless, the fact is it was made out of wood. Therefore, you can learn from it even to other cases where Efshem, where you could do it differently. And therefore, it's fine to make the other clay shardis out of wood. Mandapostle, whereas Rebbe, who says it's possible, Sava, Lloyd, Don, and Efshem, and Shefshem. You can't do that. The abu was a special case. Because of the nature of that kind of instrument that has to be made out of wood, that doesn't show that in other cases where you have the alternative to use wood or to use metal, that you should be allowed to use wood.
So
they're no, they're two different things. Done in Efshe Mishi Efshe, Lloyd done in Efshe Mishi Efshe. The Machloikas, we know. The Braisa tells us the Machloikas. We're trying to figure out the reason behind the Machloikas. So Rabbi Yosef started with the assumption that they're arguing whether Ikar Shira B'Peh or Ikar Shira B'Kli. Are the instruments part of the Avodah or not? Now we're saying that no, they might both agree that the instruments are part of the Avodah. But the question is, given that you have one kind, according to that, then you have one kind of kli shadus, which is necessarily made out of wood. Does that serve as a precedent that now we could make other clay shadus out of wood? Rabbi Yosef Yehuda would say yes. Rebbe would say no, only because only that particular one had to be made out of wood. That doesn't show that you could learn from that to anything else.
Oh, so Yosef before was the one who was matched here saying you can never contend this and burn out.
No, Rebbe is the one who's saying that. Rebbe is saying, for that reason, Rebbe, in other words, Rebbe would say, I agree there's one kli shadus that you can make out of wood, namely the avu. I disagree that you can learn from that to anything else. Whereas Rebbe Yosef ben Yehuda would say, once you have one, then you can learn from it to other ones. The difference is here, it's because of the nature of the instrument. Rebbe Yosef ben Yehuda says, doesn't matter, a precedent is a precedent. The Iboy Seymah, or yet another possibility of understanding their machlokes, the kula alma de ikar shidah b'peh. We could say they both agree that ikar shidah b'peh. So according to both of them, the instruments are not a kli, are not a kli shadus. The ain done an efsha mishi efsha, and we're not going to say we don't learn efsha from e efsha. In other words, there's no room to learn efsha from e efsha because the abu that we're trying to learn from is not a kli shadus anyway. So in other words, Rashi says what the Gemara is saying is if you say that ikar shidah b'peh, then there's nothing to learn from the abu. Or even if they held ikar shidah b'kli, they might both agree that you can't learn from the abu. And rather, the reason why Rav Yosef ben Yehuda says that clay shadus made out of wood are kosher is based on a completely different source. Namely, v'hocha b'melach menorah b'kloli oprati oibiribuyu mi'uti kamirchi. The machlokas would be, as far as the menorah particularly, now, most of the kalim in the Mishkan were made out of wood plated with gold. Fine, the fact that they're plated with gold means that they're still considered wood lahalacha, but nevertheless that's zeris hakosav to make it that way. But the menorah, it says, had to be made out of pure gold. So do we learn now when we look at the description of it? Do we darshan the psukim about it using klal of prat or with riboy umiut? Now klal of prat works like this. Rashi explains. When you have the opinion, now you have this machlokas in many different places in Shas. The idea is like this. Klal of prat would work as follows. The Torah gives us a klal. Then it gives us a prat. Before we get to klal of prat to klal, let's talk about two of the Yud Gimel Midas, Shatur and Adreshesbam, are klal of prat and prat to klal. So let's talk about first what happens if you have a klal followed by a prat. So if we say that we darshan as a klal of prat, then it means is the klal we would have said we would have thought it includes everything. Then comes the prat and tells us don't. It's restricted only to the one specific thing that's mentioned. That would be klal of prat. Now if we have a second klal, then it tells us okay, you do have to include some other things, but they have to be as similar as possible to the prat. So iyat adon elakein aprat. So, in other words, if you only had the prat, you would have nothing else included, only the one thing that's mentioned. So now at least we can include other things, but they have to be as similar to it as possible. Now, if we do ribuy or miut ribuy, that's a whole different matter. Then we say ribuy includes everything, fine, that's so far like a klal. But then when we have a miut, it doesn't come to say only that one thing. It tells us there's one particular thing that we exclude. There's one particular thing that we don't include. But everything else would be included. Then when we have the second ribuy, it tells us you're still including everything. You're only excluding the one thing, which is not. So in other words, the prat comes to tell us there's something missing from that klal. There's something that you have to exclude. And then when we have the second ribuy, then that tells us you're going to include back in everything except for the one thing that is least similar to what the prat is, to what the miut was. So now let's look at that as far as the menorah and see how that works. Rebbe Dorish Kloli Uprati. So Rebbe Darshan the Pesukim about the menorah using Kloli Uprat. Rebbe Yosef Yehuda Dorish Ribuy Umiyoti. And Rebbe Yosef Yehuda instead uses Ribuy Umiyoti. So Rebbe Dorish Kloli Uprati. He goes as follows. The Pesuk says, Va'asisa menorahs. You should make a menorah. That's klal. That's a general statement. Make a menorah. And so far, if it only said that, it would mean you can make it out of any material you want. Then it says zahav tahor prat. Then it says out of pure gold. That's a prat. If we only had the klal of prat, it would mean the only material to make the menorah out of that it would be kosher would be pure gold, nothing else. Then when it continues, miksha te'osa menorah, the menorah should be made out of one piece hammered out, chazav a kolal. Then that's a klal again. It means that it can be made out of other materials as long as it's one piece. So therefore, klal of prat of klal, you have to don elokeinah prat. So therefore, you have a klal of prat of klal. And therefore, ma prat mefurish shal machas, the prat, what can we say about it? It's we mentioned gold, which is a metal. Af kol shal machas, so we learn from that, from the second klal, that we can include other things, but they have to be fairly similar to that, namely, they have to be metals. So Rebbe would agree that the menorah could be made out of any kind of metal at all. It could even be made out of the Gemara tells us in the Gemara tells us in Menachos and in Rosh Hashanah that at one point when the Greeks stole the menorah from the Beis Hamikdash, so when the Hashmonaim recaptured the Beis Hamikdash, they had to make a menorah out of iron poles because that's all they had at the time. But it was still kosher because it was iron. In fact, in those Gemaras, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda disagrees and said they made a wooden menorah, and he says there is a proof that wood is kosher. And the other Chachamim answer him that no, it wasn't wood; it was iron plated with tin. Maybe from a distance, it was dark, it tarnished or whatever, so it looked like wood. But yeah. Anyway, so Rebbe says that's how you do it. So therefore, we wind up that the menorah can be made only out of metal, and we learn from that for all the other clay shardas that they have to be made out of metal. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, Dorosh Ribu Yomiyoti. Whereas he, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, learns based on Ribu Yomiyot. So he learns, well, Osisim Menoras Riba, the word, well, Osisim Menoras would be a Ribui, and so forth, that would mean you could make the menorah out of anything. Zahav Tahar Miyot, the word Zahav Tahar, according to him, is not a prat, which limits it only to Zahav Tahar. It's a Miyot to say there's one thing, the least similar to Zahav Tahar, that we're excluding. Then when it says then miksha to osam menorah chozer v'riba, and then you have the ribui comes to tell us rather the miyot comes to tell us we're excluding something, but we don't know what the something is yet. Then you have the ribui afterwards tells us to include back in everything except for one thing that is least similar to zahav tahor. So we're including everything. My Rabbi Komili. So by having the ribui at the end, we're adding in back in everything. My miyot, what are we excluding? Miyot shocheres. The only thing we're excluding is earthenware, because that is the least similar to gold in that it's not even something. Rashi explains elsewhere, it's not something that would be recovered to bring in front of a human king. But wood, for example, sometimes important people have wooden menorahs in their palaces or whatever. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says the ribui, miyot ribui, tells us that you could use wood. The one material that you can't use would be cheres. So clay shardas made from earthenware would be possible according to him, but made from any other material would be fine.
What was
the miyot? The miyot, according to him, tells us the miyot is the word zahav tahar.
So you think that the only thing you can't
use is Zahav Tahar. No, of course you could use Zahav Tahar. It says so. What it means is the miyot tells us you have to exclude something, but we don't know what the something is yet. Or so far we would say that it means if we only had the ribui or miyot, then fine, it would mean you have to have things that are at least fairly similar to gold. Maybe like Rebbe would say, you'd have all at that point only metals. But because you have afterwards a ribui, then it means you can include even non-metals. The only thing you're excluding is the one thing that's the furthest away from gold. Oh. And that would be cheres. Yeah. Okay.
Not wood, but cheres,
right. Because wood at least is more becovered, but cheres is not. In particular, you have, for example, you have the Mishnah in Shabbos mentions, for example, that you have a case over there where you have a container, a reservoir suspended above a lamp in order to drip oil into it, where you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos unless you have it permanently attached, because otherwise you may use oil from it. And you have, for example, it says over there, even if it's made out of cheres, where even though as soon as it's used, it becomes dirty and disgusting, still you're not allowed to, because you still might use some of the oil. So yeah, kli cheres, once it's used for lighting, it becomes dirty and disgusting, and therefore you wouldn't use it even in front of a bus of a dog. So Rabbi Yosef Yehuda agrees that you can't use that for the menorah. Yeah. Amar Papa Katanoi. In fact, a Papa says this question of whether ikir shirib a pair or ikir shirib a kli, which is what Rabbi Yosef was trying to use to understand the machlokas of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. This point, Rabbi Papa says, is actually machlokas between other Tanoim as well. The Tanya, or the Tanan, really, it's Mishnah and Erchin. Now, when you have, so you have the Levim are standing over there on the Duchan and singing while the Korbanos are being brought. Then you have, there was a musical accompaniment. Who were those people who were playing the instruments? So, Avde, Koinim Hoyu, Divir Meir. Rav Meir says they were the slaves of the Koinim. Rav Yossi says, no, they weren't Avodim. Mishpachas based Apgorim, or Mishpachas based Tziparia. They were the families of based Apgorim and based Tziparia, which were known families in those days. They were from a place called Imom, or Imos, is a city on the road between Yerushalayim and between Yerushalayim and nowadays Tel Aviv. Someplace in the center of the country. They had hot springs there. They had various other comforts of life over there. These people were from there. Shoyim Asi and the Kohuna, they were Yisraelim who had proper yichus, where their families could marry Kohanim. Their widows or their daughters would be allowed to marry Kohanim. There was no concern about psula yichus among them. So there were Yisraelim with yichus. And Rav Chanina ben Atikna say, Levim are you? Rav Chanina ben Atikna says the ones who were playing the instruments were Levim, but not Yisraelim. So three different opinions. Was it Avodim? Was it Avodim Knanim, that is? Was it Yisraelim or was it Levim? Now, my lab, Bahokam is Levim. So the Papa says, wouldn't we have to say that that's the Machlokas? Demand the Omer Avodim are you? Rav Meir, who says that they were Avodim, he holds the main part of the avoda is the singing, so that the Levim had to do, and therefore it doesn't matter who's playing the instrument, because the instrument is not an essential part of the avoda. And the same way would be according to Rabbi Yossi, who says they were Yisraelim, because after all the avoda of the shir has to be done by Levim, but according to him that's not part of the avoda, the instruments. And Chananel ben Antignus, who says they were Levim, he would hold the main part of the Shira is with the instruments, and therefore the instruments have to be played by people who have the mitzvah to do that avoda, namely Levim. So there you go. You'd have an example where Tanoim argue whether Ikar Shira B'Peh or Ikar Shira B'Kli. The Gemara says V'Tispera. If you're going to understand it that way, how could you understand it that way? Then you have to ask Rabbi Yossi, my Kasavar. So what does Rabbi Yossi hold? Rabbi Meir, then we understand it can be anybody, even Avodim. Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, we understand he says it can only be Levim. Why would Rabbi Yossi be saying it can be Yisraelim, but it can't be Avodim? What's the difference? E Kasavar, E Kashira B'Peh. If he holds the main part of the shira is the vocals, I feel Avodim Nami, then he should agree with Rav Meir that even Avodim are fine to play the instruments. Ika Sava Ika Shira Bakli, and if he holds the main thing is with the instruments, Levim Ein Yisraelim Lai, then he would have to agree with Rav Chananel ben Antignus, then only Levim. So if we only had Rav Meir and Rav Chananel ben Antignus, fine, you can understand the Machlokas that way. But now that we have Rav Yossi's opinion as well, you have to take that into consideration. So it can't be that that's the Machlokas. Ela de kula alma ika shira b'peh. Rather, we're going to say that everybody holds ika shira b'peh, and therefore the instruments don't matter as far as who plays them because it's not part of the avoda anyway. So all the machlokas is just a practical thing. So they're just arguing how it actually was. Now, in that case, then why are they having the machlokas? What do we care what actually was, if it's not negei l'halacha anyway? The answer is it is negei l'halacha. L'may nafkamina, what would be a practical nafkamina from it? L'malin miduchan l'yuchsin ul'maysa kamifidi. Are we allowed to raise somebody up from the duchan for yuchsin and for maysa? Meaning, like this, how do we know that a person is a levi, or for that matter, a koyan or anything? So nowadays we rely just on chazaka. In those times, often they had actual eders to that effect. But here, so let's say we have a person, we don't know for a fact that he's a levi, but we saw him on the duchan playing the musical instruments. Is that enough of a basis to say that he is a levi, and therefore we should consider him a levi miyuchas, that we should consider him an actual bona fide levi, and that we should give him meiser? Can we do that or not?
And to get him up on duchan, that was set up by people who, in order to go up,
well, that's what we have to figure out. So Manda Omer Avodim Hoyu. So Reb Meir, who holds that they were Avodim, he says Kasava Ein Malin Meduchan LeYuchsin Vele LeMeiser. It doesn't matter. Even if you see somebody playing the instruments on the Duchan, that's not reason enough to assume that he's a Levi and therefore to give him Meiser Rishad or to consider him a Levi Meyuchas. So in fact, then so in other words, according to the mayor, they weren't picky about who goes and stands over there because it doesn't matter. Even if somebody is standing there, they're not going to come because of that to mistakenly consider him a Levi. Umanda Om Yisrael Hoyu. Rabbi Yossi who says they restrain them. Kasava Malim Duchan LeYuchsin Avaloy LeMaisa. He says when you see somebody playing the instruments on the Duchan, that's reason enough to say that he's a Meyuchas. And therefore, in other words, that he's not an Eved and he can marry a Bas Yisrael, but not enough to say that he's a Levi. So therefore, according to him, you Davka have to have Yisraelim over there, because if you were going to put Avodim, then people would mistakenly think that they are Miyuchas, that they're not Avodim, but rather people with Yuchsim. Umanda Omar. Levim how you and Reb Chananim and Antignus, who says they were Levim, Kasava Malan Meduchan Bein LeYuchsin Bein LeMaiser. He says both. Once you see that somebody was playing the instruments on the Duchan, then that's reason enough to know that he's a Meyuchas and that he's a Levi, and you can give him Meiser. So therefore, Bedavka to begin with, they would make sure to only place Levim over there, because if you placed Yisraelim over there, then eventually people might think that a Yisrael is really a Levi.
What do you think? Because Canaan would be like Chelis in the
Beit Midrash. I don't understand.
To have the plain interest by Canaan, who are the low.
Okay, so they're low.
Because
in front of a melech boss of a dom, you have avodim knanim serve, so you could have avodim knanim not really serve. That's the thing we're saying. It's not really a serve. It's not really an avoda. Yeah, not really. Anyway, that's how Rashi learns it. In other words, that the causation is that they would make sure to put only the kind of people who, if you mile them from that to Yuchsin or to Meiser, then there won't be a problem. Tosfa says that the causation is the other way around. Because Rav Chananim and Antignus hold that the Levim were the most expert in musical instruments, therefore they would have Davka them play. And the result of that is that if you see somebody playing over there, you know that he's a Levi and you can mile him Yuchsin. And the Meiser, and Rabbi Yossi would hold that Yisraelim are capable of that also, and Rabbi Meir would hold that even Avodim are capable of that, and then therefore you could even have Avodim over there, and therefore according to him, so again the causation would be according to Rabbi Meir, you see somebody playing the instrument, there's no particular reason to think that he's a Levi, because there's no reason to think that Dr. Levim are experts in it. Therefore, the result of that is that we're not Mila from Duchan to Truma and Yosin. So the causation is the way is the opposite of the way that the opposite of the way Rashi says it.
Is the outcome.
What?
Outcome.
Right, right. So what's the cause and what's the effect? Right. So we don't have to understand that they're arguing at all about Iker Shidda B'Peh or Iker Shidda B'Kli. They might all agree that Iker Shidda B'Peh, if anybody held that Iker Shidda B'Kli, no question you would have to have Levium, but because Iker Shidda B'Peh, then therefore conceivably you could have non-Levium doing it as well. So all of that is one way of understanding the machloikas of Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda and the Chachamim that we brought before on Nunam and Beis, whether the cholil is doicha Shabbos and Yom Tov or not. So all of that is one way that we're arguing about in connection with the korban, and the question is whether Iker Shidda B'Peh or B'Kli. Now we'll stop over here and we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with another way of learning the machlokas, which is the other way around. We can say that they all agree that the shear of the korban is doicha Shabbos because it's considered part of the avodah, and the question would be about the shear of Simchas Beis Hasheva, that where Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda would be holding that even that is doicha Shabbos, and therefore our Mishnah wouldn't be according to him.
So everyone agrees that
you play the music even on Shabbos or on Yom Tov because it's considered an essential part of the avodah.
Right.
So we'll take up that point tomorrow, Hashem.
Shkayach.
Yeah.